the show! You have all made it through the dance.
To you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 64. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. And this week's guest is someone's voice you have heard before you've heard mine right now. How is that possible? Well, it's because this week's guest created the intro that you just heard. He's the one who says, coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X. See, it doesn't sound as good when I'm saying it because it's me. I can't introduce myself in the third person. I sound ridiculous. But that person is Mike Santos. Good buddy of mine. We went to college together, worked at KCSU together, and he is a radio ninja. That's how he refers to himself on his Twitter page. I think it's Radio Production Ninja. And he has had commercial production jobs all across this great land, San Francisco, Denver, LA. He's now doing it in Australia for the number one morning show in all of Australia. Think, Seacrest meets Stern, that kind of thing. It's called the Kyle and Jackie O Show. And Mike moved down there 7 months ago after building a very impressive resume for himself here in the States. Before moving to Australia, he actually worked with Carson Daly on his radio show in LA. And I had no idea what to think about Carson Daly. I didn't particularly have an opinion of him one way or the other, but he sounds like an awesome dude. And Mike talks about that throughout this week's show. We get into that fairly early on. We also talk about the work that he did in San Francisco and in Denver and sort of how he approaches his trade. This is John of All Trades. We should get into how someone does their trade, should we not? So a lot of shop talk here because I'm kind of a radio nerd. I come out of radio. I love doing college radio. We share some stories from our time at KCSU together, which anytime I get to talk about that, I'm a happy guy because that was one of my very favorite things about college. One of my very favorite things that I have ever done. Loved doing college radio, and Mikey was a big part of that. It's where we became friends and we kept in contact after that, and I told him this story about when he left and moved to San Francisco. I was really bummed, but I knew he was going to crush it out there, and he did, and he's done it in LA. He's now doing it in Australia for the number one show there, and he's just one of my favorite people, and he's insanely talented, as evidenced by the high production value at the beginning of this show, which, you know, hopefully I'm not befouling it too much with my shitty production value and my amateur skills, but I think we do okay. Mike is head and shoulders above me, and so it's just a joy to get to talk to him. He was in town for only a week, so the very fact that I got to siphon off an hour of his time and just sit down and chat with him was awesome. We went out to drinks the night before, and I just missed the dude like crazy. So be sure to check him out. I link to his work on the blog, so go to johnofalltrades.us. That's J-O-N of all trades.us. You'll find a link to his SoundCloud. You'll find a link to the station where he's working now, the show that he's working now in Australia. And check out samples of his work because he is just exceptional at what he does. And I know I'm hyping this a lot, but whatever. I hype the work that I like, and I just want to point you to honest, good work. And Mike does that a lot. So also, if you're listening to us on iTunes, thank you very much. Also on Stitcher. If you're on either one of those platforms, if you'd give us a rating and give us a review, that would mean just the world to me. Speaking of who, give us a link, however you want to give us a link, whether that's Facebook, whether that's Twitter, however you want to get it out to people. Carrier pigeon, I don't really care. But Facebook is J-O-A-T pod. Twitter is the same. So everything links back to the John of All Trades website. It's J-O-N of all trades.us. And really, that's all I'm going to pimp here right in the front because we got a lot of episode here. Mike Santos, production director, imaging director. He explains the difference between those two things on this week's episode, episode 64. Here it comes. It starts now.
It's one of those things where even when I get home and I'll, you know, turn on the TV just to unwind or whatever. I mean, today is an exception because I was watching the news. But, like, I get home, I'll turn on the TV and I'll put it on, like, four. and I'll just sit and watch pictures because I can't be bothered to like listen to anything anymore. You know, it's like music's on. I'm like, no, I can't even listen to music anymore. You know, it's like people get into radio because they love music and they love, you know, going to shows. And, you know, essentially the same thing was for me. But when you're just cutting audio all day long, you're just like, I can't hear anything. I don't want to listen to anything. Even on the train, I can't listen to music on the train anymore.
Do you just sit there and be quiet?
Yeah.
Wow.
It makes me feel a little bit useless because I'll just sit on the couch and just like drown it out. But, you know, it's just one of those things, you know, like when people say what your favorite band is, I'm like, I don't know. I don't even know what's playing on the radio anymore.
You're like, it doesn't even matter.
Yeah. I like the stuff that I like from way back in the day, and I might not even like them now, you know, right. You know, and that's kind of just how the whole thing works out. Just it's noise. At one point, it just turns to noise.
Well, yeah, it's funny. I mean, when I do this show, part of the thing is I have to, like, I'm staring at audio blocks all day, just like blobs of like, just like the little colored, like amorphous sort of shapes.
Yeah.
And it's funny. I've done this show enough to where I can look at it and go, okay, that's where someone said, that is.
Yeah.
And there are people who will say and then immediately go into something else. And I go, damn it! Like, I can't get that one out.
It's, you know, when I'm chopping interviews and audio like that, I kind of like to leave some of them in.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Just for that natural kind of rhythm of the conversation. When we're editing promos, you know, we kind of splice a little tighter. They call it dovetail editing, where the end of the last sound kind of runs over the start of the next sound. It just makes for like a tighter, quicker paced promo.
Yeah.
But you start to pick up certain tricks where, like, if the last word ends in an S and the next word ends in an S, you can combine those. Starts in an S. You can combine those two S's, and it sounds perfectly natural.
Sounds flawless.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty great because but you're right. You'll start to get to the point where you'll look at audio and you're like, that's an S. Right. That's a P or
that's a K.
Yeah, you know, because you'll just see the spike in the audio, or you'll see kind of a bit of a like a plosive break in the audio like waveform where it just kind of rattles the mic a little bit, and you'll start to pick those out.
Yeah,
and then you start editing to that, and you're just like, well, I don't even know what this sounds like anymore sometimes.
Yeah, you're like, are we still speaking English? Yeah. I can't even tell.
Yeah, and you're like, well, I think that, you know, I think this sounds okay, but then you'll listen, it's like, man, that's way too tight. You know, editing an interview as opposed to editing a promo are two completely different things, and sometimes you just have to flip your brain to the other side, because if you're editing promos all day long, then you have to go and edit an artist interview, and then all of a sudden everything gets too tight, and you're saying, well, that sounds terrible.
Totally. I remember I was doing, back when I was working in the PR agency, we were cutting like a radio interview, and we had to get it down to time. Like, that's the big thing with promos and commercials and stuff. You have to hit the time, and the copy was too long. The copy's always too long.
Always, yeah.
And so we were taking out like his inhales, and so I knew that, and I knew like I could tighten it up when I was doing my own show. And if you go back and listen to like when I'm recording the early intros, I suck all the air out. And so I'm listening to it, I go, oh shit! Like this sounds terrible. Like this doesn't sound like a real person.
Yeah, no.
And so you have to leave some of that in. But here's the other thing, though. You got to take some of that out because people are listening. And like, if you're sitting with someone, you're not paying attention to that. But when you're alone in your headphones, listening to two people talk, particularly in a podcast, you need it to move along a little bit zippier.
Yeah. You can't have a very,
but not promo zippy.
Yeah. No, you can't have a very long winded person in a podcast.
Yeah.
Unless for some reason the way they talk and the rhythm of the voice is still somewhat intriguing, but if they kind of drone
on, yeah,
like the dude from Inside the Actor Studio, he could never do a podcast because
it'd be forever.
Yeah, you can't just sit through it, you know.
There's a time for a pregnant pause.
Yes, absolutely.
And especially one of the things I struggle with is there will be times where someone is considering, and when I'm editing, I have to be very wary if I'm changing the nature of their answer.
Yes.
Because if someone is like pondering and considering, you want that to be in there. If it's just sort of meaningless and there's nothing, you know, or they're like coughing or taking a drink of water or something, then fucking take it out.
Yeah.
But you don't want to make them seem like they're being glib or they had that answer like right out of the holster if you ask them a challenging question. But it's like, oh, no, they considered this. So the audience should know that they considered this. So you leave that pause in for that reason, right?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Because it's just a natural way of speaking you know, or a conversation. You know, the thing that I always hated most when I was commercial production director for a couple stations was that, you know, like you said, people would write copy that's too long. And as the production guy, I'd have to go back and say, hey, your copy's too long. It's not going to fit the time in a sense where it seems natural. And the first thing they say is, we'll just speed it up. You know,
it's like, thanks.
Yeah, it's like I can't take 35 seconds worth of copy and audio and speed it to 30 seconds because he's going to sound ridiculous.
He's going to sound like a micro machine.
Exactly, but they don't consider that when they're writing copy, you know, and they don't... When people write copy for ads and things like that, most of the time they stick to a word count.
Mm-hmm.
And a word count is great as a basis, but something they should also consider is the person talking. Like for example, I speak very quickly when I read ads.
Right.
But I also speak very clearly when I do it. So I can read, you know, 37 seconds of copy in like 30 seconds.
Sure, yeah.
You know, and it still sounds coherent and it still sounds natural. But when, you know, you get other people who speak slower, you can get 37 seconds of copy and they'll say it in 45. And I don't know what to do with this. Because when you're chopping 15 seconds of copy, that's essentially half the ad.
Yeah.
You know, so...
That's a lot of words.
It is a lot of words. And people just see, like, the line count and the word count. Like, oh, well, you know, 30 seconds of copy is X amount of words. I meet that. And then all of a sudden when you say it's too long, you're like, what do you mean it's too long?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's true of anything when you're writing copy because you'd be like, you'll have an op-ed and it'll be like, you know, we got 800 words and you'll get it and it's 794 words and they go, see, no, we're good. And you go, yeah, well, it still sucks.
Yeah.
Like, you could have made this point in 600 words.
Yeah.
So, like, let's figure out, the importance here is in, you know, figuring out how we're optimally... you know, conveying the message.
Exactly. And for me, it was great because when we were in college, I majored in journalism, but then I also minored in English.
Oh, nice.
English creative writing. So so in the upper level English classes, we'd get these, you know, 6 to 8 page papers about X whatever.
Yeah.
And the English majors would be writing 8 pages. Right. And me, I'd...
And they'd done be it, fucking with the margins and, yeah, like, and, making it single
but
space.
I'd be
stuff.
Done in 4.5.
Yeah.
And I'd say, you know, I'm like, I know it's supposed to be 6, but here it is in 4.5. Just read it and let me know if it's okay. And professor's like, yeah, it's good.
Right.
You know, you kind of just learn how to be concise with your words when you only have so many words to, you know.
But dude, that's the funniest thing about grad school, too, is they would give us, they'd be like, okay, this, you know, this can be no more than 20 pages. And when you're an undergrad, you're like, geez, 20 pages, are you nuts?
Yeah.
But you start getting into it and you get too much theory and you sort of get up your own ass a little bit. And so like when you're young, you need the floor.
Yeah.
When you're older, you need the ceiling.
Yeah.
And in particular with what you do, you definitely need the ceiling more than you need the floor.
These days, yes, definitely.
Because, I mean, you can always, you know, you can always put extra stuff in, you know, like effects or whatever. And speaking of which... If everyone recognizes your voice, and they should, it's because they've heard it at the beginning of every single episode of this show, doing the opening promo. So Mike Santos is joining us from, normally you're in Australia.
Yes.
But you happen to be here, which is fantastic. You managed to skip town before I could get you anything.
No.
As a thank you for doing the promo.
It was my pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's awesome. People tell me, they're like, who does your promo? I'm like, it's this guy, Mike. He did, at the time you were production director. Was that your title?
When did we do a couple years ago?
It was in the beginning of 14.
The beginning of last year.
So like right around Christmas of 13.
Okay. Yeah.
Beginning of 14.
I was the commercial production director for 97.1 Amp Radio in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And I was also the imaging producer for the Carson Daly Morning Show on the same station and the countdown producer for the Daily Download with Carson Daly. So that's his weekly countdown for essentially, like, you know, the AT40 with Ryan Seacrest and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah, it was like old, like Casey Kasem style.
Yeah, exactly. Right. You know?
Like, here's Katy Perry with whatever.
Right. Right? Yeah. So I was a show producer, production guy for that show, and all the other stuff as well.
So. Okay. So when you say, what's the difference between production director and imaging director?
So the production director is essentially the guy that handles all the ads, what we talked about with, you know, voiceovers, writing copy, doing commercial ads for clients. The imaging director.
So like advertisers. Like,
yeah, yeah.
So everyone from what, like car dealerships?
Yeah. Through. So if a car dealer came to, or if one of our sales accounts sold a car dealership spot on the station and they wanted X amount of ads, we'd come up with a copy. More than likely it would be voiced by me, then produced by me and put to air.
Right.
You know, that kind of stuff. The imaging director is responsible for the sonic signature of the radio station or the show.
Okay.
So anything that said Carson Daly mornings on 97.1 Amp Radio, I'd be making that. If it had anything to do with Carson's show, I'd be responsible for that. The Daily Download, I basically created that show conceptually from how it was structured to segments and then produced all the audio sounds for that as well. And that's basically what I'm doing in Australia right now.
Wow. That's cool. Did you work pretty closely with Carson? Or was he fairly, like, were there steps between you and him?
Actually, you know, the great thing about Carson was that he was very hands-on with the show for the most part. You know, when he wasn't busy doing The Voice
The
Voice, Today Show, Last Call, Carson Daly, things like that. You know, right. Carson likes to be very involved with his project. So when I got to L.A., and they put me on the show, it was like, okay, we need this. And so I'd make it that day for whatever reason. And Carson's like, okay, it's a little too, you know.
Whatever.
Urban, or it's a little, you know, just.
Yeah.
You know, not really the vibe of the show. So yeah, once.
Make your voice a little less barfy.
Exactly. Kind of thing, right? Yeah, yeah. So after a couple goes of that, probably took about 2-3 weeks to kind of get the idea of what Carson wanted. Okay. Then everything was cruisy. It was like, I need this, make it, that's great.
How do you create for your client, basically?
Yeah, exactly. And then over the course of 3 years, it was just, this is coming up. I trust you to do whatever you need to do.
Right.
And then, you know, when it came to the Daily Download, we launched that probably my last year in L.A., and it got to that point where he was like, I trust whatever you're making.
Wow.
So it was really cool, and it was a really good situation.
It's going to be a good feeling.
Yeah. You know, it was nice to see it launch after so many weeks of pre-production and prepping and getting clocks right and making sure that we knew what content we were going to use and how we were going to set it up in a show. Because with a 3-hour show and 30 songs, you know, on average, you'll do maybe 12 songs to fill the hour with really short talk breaks, essentially. But when you're doing only 30 songs, you're like, okay, well, how do we fill in those extra time gaps?
Right.
You know, doing like what kind of, do we do a new music pick? Do we do like a flashback feature or something like that just to kind of keep the show interesting.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a lot of fun launching that show.
Because radio is weird in that it's a medium that everyone listens to, but it's such a solo experience.
Mm-hmm.
It's like podcast. I remember when we met at KCSU, one of the pieces of training that they gave us was, and something that DJs, I think, particularly college DJs, struggle with, is saying, like, you guys or you all.
Mm-hmm.
No, it should be, you use the singular.
Yes.
You, you know, because it's you and the listener. I mean, they might be listening in a group, but more often than not, you want them to have the experience of connecting directly with that DJ or that station or that piece of promotion or whatever.
Yeah.
It should be geared entirely towards them as an individual, right?
Yeah, and that's always something we learned outside of KCSU. You know, my first on-air gig was that talk to somebody.
Mm.
You know, Gabe, who's a mutual friend of ours.
He was on the show. He was episode 13.
When we worked at... This was still when we were at KCSU because he had just started working at KISS in Fort Collins. And I remember I walked into the studio one day because I did the shift right after his.
Mm-hmm.
And he drew this ugly little like caricature of something with like short arms and just a big head. And I was like, Gabe, what the fuck is that? And he said, that's who I talk to every morning. And it paid off for him because Gabe was a great jock on air.
He was one of the best that we had. And
he won an award for it.
Yeah. And
he did.
He was like best college DJ in the country, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Didn't you get like best in show at one point for some piece of production?
Yeah, same festival. KCSU cleaned up that year.
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah, we did.
Because Moses won something too, didn't he?
I think it was a couple years before us. Okay. He also won Best DJ for something else.
Jeez.
Yeah, it was a piece I did for 9/11, just after 9/11, just like a memorial piece.
Wow.
And I think that was the, that was 2001. So it was just as I was getting into production. So that was probably the biggest production piece that I had ever produced at the time, conceptually and things like that. And the funny thing is, because I was so new at it, I was still flying blind a little bit.
It took
forever to get what I wanted in my head onto the screen and manipulate it to the way I wanted it to sound. And, you know, looking back, like, the piece itself is great. I think I still have it somewhere on the CD.
Cool. All right.
One of those things you don't really want to ever lose.
Yeah.
I have all
my production from KCSU.
Yeah.
I went in, like, before I graduated. And I was drinking a lot then, so like the fact that I had the clarity to do this. And I went into whoever production director was at that point. It might have been like Saint Nick or someone.
Yeah.
But I went in and I'm like, dude, I want you to put all of these on a CD. And I immediately went home and saved it to like every piece of like hardware that I could. And I still have it. It's in my iTunes. And
yeah, no, I listen to that stuff now. And I'm like, man, okay.
It holds up.
If I heard it, if I was a guy looking for a production kid, if I was going to hire and I got my demo from, 14 years ago or whatever it was, 10 years ago, I'd hear him like, there's potential there.
Right.
You know, and it just needs a little refining. You know, it's a little rough, but there's a lot of potential, blah, blah, blah. But back when I graduated, I was like, man, this shit's hot. I don't know why I'm not getting a job in Boston or DC or, you know, any of those big markets.
Better than these old farts.
This shit's awesome. You know, but looking at it, I'm like, it's a little rough.
Yeah, like in what way? Like,
potential.
Like, how's it rough?
Like,
do some of the edges show? Like,
a little bit. You know, when I first started doing radio imaging and production for real, at a real radio station, not that, you know.
Yes, no, I know what you mean. College is one thing, and KCSU's reputation is impeccable.
Yeah, but I also worked at, you know, a station in Fort Collins where they kind of just gave me the liberties to do whatever I wanted. With very little, I don't want to say little insight, but, you know, not a lot of, there wasn't an imaging director there or a production director that I can kind of siphon information from. But when I got to San Francisco and I started doing it for real, I started to learn that, you know, as much as great production involves really good technical skills, great production is best when copy is great.
Yeah.
You know, so learning things like how to write proper copy for promos and sweepers, how to use EQ and compression to bring out the voice instead of making stuff louder, you know, you just kind of
Well, it's almost like, I mean, what you're talking about is almost like a wrestling promo. Where, like, guys will shout at the camera. You know, you're watching Hulk Hogan, and he's basically just blasting you with a fire hose that is his voice.
Yeah.
And you compare that to someone like Jake the Snake, who's quiet and never raised his voice and never yelled, but you lean in.
Right.
Like, is that what you're describing?
Yeah, exactly. Like, if you want to use a more current superstar, I guess, like, a promo from Bray Wyatt.
Right, yeah, there you go.
You know, it's very all over the place, but it's intriguing.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not just because of the intensity, because you get the same intensity when you whisper and you start talking really slowly, and then you bring it all out, and that's the kind of stuff, you know, technically that I also needed to learn, you know, because great production, anybody can splash some sound effects in or mix some music to something else,
right.
But if you're not selling your message properly, you're not effectively selling the station.
Yeah,
you know, and that goes for advertisements. You know, the best people in the world that do it do movie trailers.
Yeah, no,
you
that's know, a good point.
Best editors, things like that, they make the greatest movie trailers.
I've been talking to a guy, it's funny, he's the husband of one of Kristen's good friends, and they had a baby like 3 days before us.
Mm-hmm.
He makes movie trailers.
God, that's so awesome.
And I'm dying to have him on the show.
Like, movie trailers, the great thing about movie trailers, and it's something that we all strive for when we make radio promos and things like that, like, movie trailers, the timing is spot on.
Yeah.
You know, and not just like in terms of like seconds or whatever, but you know, they give it, if there's a punchline that's going to be delivered, they give it just enough room where that punchline becomes hilarious. Like, if it's too tight, you're like,
yeah.
If it's too late, you kind of lose the lose the joke, but the timing is spot on with the way they edit every hit, every, you know, like it all works out seamlessly where it doesn't seem like it's not supposed to be there.
No, you're right. I mean, and a perfect example of this is I remember the first trailer I ever saw for Superbad. I'm like, this looks like Angus, but like R-rated. I'm like, this looks fucking dumb.
Yeah.
And then online, I saw the Red Band trailer, and I go, this looks like the funniest fucking movie ever, and I have to go see it.
Just like Ted. You know, the Red Band for Ted was way better than the actual trailer.
Totally.
You know?
Red Band for The Hangover also.
Mm-hmm.
I go, whoa, this movie's pure anarchy.
God, if I got to make Red Band radio promos, oh, the shit that would go in there.
That would be... Although especially it's audio,
on my show,
though.
Especially on my show, though. But, we clean it up a lot sometimes.
Well, yeah, I mean, you'd have to. When you're reading copy, like... And I know, like, you'll affect your voice in different ways. And what I may do during this show is, like, you've made some copy, or you've made some promos for me in college. And I may just splice them in here,
okay,
like, just for fun.
Listen up, kiddies. It's time once again for the Johnny X Rant of the Week.
The views expressed by Johnny X do not reflect those of KCSU, its managers, or operators. In fact, chances are views expressed are probably idiotic and will cause you to roll your eyes.
And now,
here's Johnny!
Do you consider, when you're approaching something, like, do you have, like, characters? And I don't mean, like, characters like anything, you know, like, gimmicky. You know, like you're some, you know, fucking morning zoo. Like that Jimmy Fallon thing you used to do on SNL.
I do have that character. Yeah. But, yeah, you kind of take into account what you're doing. My regular voiceover voice sounds more like my speaking voice, which is what you're essentially supposed to do. But my promo voice...
It's like Seth MacFarlane with Brian Griffin.
Right. Yeah. You know, my promo voice is a little more kind of direct and straightforward. And that's the voice I use for radio. When I did the intro for the podcast, you know, it's very, you're listening to the X-Act, you know, that kind of thing. You know, it's depending on the format.
Yeah, it's sort of intense. Like, it's a little bit.
Yeah, it's a little bit intense. But then if I do like a pop station, you know, I voice Kiss. I'm the third voice on Kiss FM Sydney and Kiss FM Melbourne, and that voice is very, you know, Sydney's Kiss 106. You know, it's fun and it's you know, because we also have the Australian voices. But then when they use stuff for Hollywood, they tend to use me because I'm an American, and you know, it kind of sells the stars a little for it. But it's always like Sydney's Kiss 106.5. You know, Kyle and Jackie O in the morning, that kind of stuff. You know,
yeah. So a little bit more upbeat, a little bit more sort of, there was almost like sunshine in your voice, that kind of thing.
Yeah, there's a brightness, there's a party feel to it. But yeah, you know, you'll get the occasional promos where they're like, they want you to do the very dramatic read, and you got to drop everything into the bottom of your throat and feel like you smoked 15 cigarettes just before you did it. And, you know, like, I like those reads because they're fun to do. I'm not particularly great at them, I don't think, because I just don't have that natural voice.
For the next 2 hours, you will experience not only the finest punk and ska in the universe, but also a battle so grandiose and spectacular that mere radio waves cannot contain its magnitude. Two of the most powerful forces ever battle head-to-head each week, giving you an epic show and an opportunity to participate in which force stands triumphant.
Greed is good. Greed is right. Greed works.
Capitalism is indeed organized crime. We're all the victims.
It's the Bipolar Show!
I'm Casey and this is Johnny X.
And this is your radio 90.5 KCSU Fort Collins. Casey, why are you always so mean to me?
Don't worry, Johnny X. It's time to rock.
God, I hate you.
But yeah, you definitely have to kind of consider what kind of promo you're reading for. You know, I mean, I voice a station in Anchorage where it's all, hey guys, come to the party, blah, blah, blah. But they just had some, I
do
forgot
what it was.
You still
do that?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I still voice their station.
Wow.
But they also had some event happen, and it was, you know, donate to the American Red Cross, you know, just be very serious with it.
Very sort of somber.
Yeah.
Like, otherwise, not somber, but like sober.
Yeah. You know, very direct and very caring and, you know, kind of that kind of stuff. And, you know, you really have to pay attention. You know, if you just get copy and read whatever,
right?
You know, then you're just going to completely lose the whole message, and you know, your program director's going to be pissed. And it's like, dude, you need to recut this. It sounds like shit. And I'm like, okay,
dude,
sorry.
The thing that's amazing to me is a lot of times when I was working PR, we had to use the voice of the client.
Yeah,
which sucks. Because and she was such a sensitive little puppy about it too.
Yeah.
And so she's in the booth reading this copy and we're like, okay, try reading it this way. Like do it more this way, hit this word for emphasis. And she couldn't fucking do it.
Yeah.
And you go, there's a lot more to this than you ever thought, because being in radio, you're around people who can like read copy.
Yeah.
You know, and can do different takes with it. And when you get someone who doesn't have that experience and you watch them sort of like fumble around and fuck it up,
it's a little frustrating.
It's really frustrating because people are like, I don't hear the difference. And you go, how do you not hear the difference?
Yeah. And you know, what I used to do, because in radio, you know, especially with car dealerships, you know, the owner likes to come in and do the spots and things like that. After a while, you kind of have to take the initiative and say, all right, just repeat after me and read it the way you want it read. Because when they hear it, it's easier.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if you just tell them you're listening to Nine News on whatever, you know, but say, I want you to say it like this. You're listening to Nine News. Yeah. You know, when they hear the inflection, it's right. easier for them to repeat it because they don't do this naturally. So or professionally, I guess. And they just don't understand when you say, put the inflection on the news.
Yeah.
Or, you know, put the inflection on the nine instead of saying, you're now listening to Nine News.
Yeah.
They just kind of feel like they're doing it anyway. So, you know, it's very kindergarten.
Right.
But at the same time, it's really effective. Plus, when you don't have a lot of time to kind of go through stuff, it just gets your point across faster. And, you know, when you're renting out a studio that they charge you $300 an hour, you know, and you're sitting there on one line for 30 minutes, you're like, well, fuck, how do we get through this? And, you know, that's, you kind of have to have
you gotta
a good,
pick up the pace.
Yeah, you got to have a good EP guy who's sitting there. It's like, no, you got to say it like this. Yeah. And, you know, I've had sessions where I was in the booth that have lasted an hour and a half or that lasted 15 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, and when they know, when the people in charge of the project know what they want, they know how they hear it in their head, then it's easier to get everything done as quickly as possible. And you know, if you have an EP who you know is struggling, or you know their talent is struggling, then they're just like, all right, just read after me. I do that all the time, especially with new VO people, you know, because I'll have client tags I have to put on the end of promos or whatever, and, you know, I can't always be the voice of that. I can't have a professional do it. You know, I'll just drag one of the girls in from the show and be like, hey, come in here real quick.
Right.
You know, and rather than say, here's a copy, read it, I'll just say, they'll be like, what do I have to say? And then I'll just read each line by line, how I want it, and they just repeat it, and then we're done.
And then you cut it all together.
Exactly.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And then you just have to worry if they're close enough to the mic. You know,
right.
And that's it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's it. So,
well, and I mean, that's an easy enough fix.
Yeah.
It's funny, sometimes when I'll be doing this show and I'll sort of pepper my guests with banter about whatever, you know, like, what'd you do today? Like, because I'm testing the levels. And people...
Like you did to me when before we actually...
Yeah, exactly.
I see what you're doing.
So, but people sometimes, like, they know the mics are on. And, you know, I'll be like, so what'd you do today? And they're like, I had lunch. And you go, no, you gotta give me a little bit. Tell me about the lunch. Like, I need you to talk so I can hear what's going on.
Yeah.
But... it's so funny. I mean, working in radio, you've been in production for a long time, but you also used to host. And I mean, you've interviewed a bunch of people on air, and it's so funny to watch people just stiffen up as soon as they realize the mics are on. And the thing that was so weird to me was, I'm like, because I, you know, we interviewed bands all the time at KCSU, and I'm like, you guys go and you play, you're basically performing your art in front of people who are judging you. This is just you and me in a room having a conversation, and you're more nervous for this.
Yeah. Well, you know, for the smaller artists, you know, they don't get to do it very often.
Right.
So, you know, so when they get behind the microphone in a situation like that, they're not quite sure how to project themselves. You know, at least when you talk to the bigger artists, you know, they've done it so often, and they're very comfortable with who they are as an artist that they, you know, you can kind of just get into a pattern with them, and it, you know, you can kind of just go with it, But you know, with the younger artists, you kind of have to put them someplace where they feel comfortable.
Yeah.
You know, so when
particularly in radio, though, like a print interview is different. Like Chuck Klosterman used to say when he was interviewing people, he'd always. Like, a lot of people, they'll approach an interview like they want to be friends with their interview subject, which I think makes for terrible interviews.
Well, I think it depends.
Okay, you're right on the format, but I just want to finish this point. He'd say he wanted to get something out of them that no one knew.
Yeah.
So he said to put himself at ease, he would ask them the question that he was most uncomfortable asking them and do it early.
Yeah.
Just to get it out of the way, because it's almost like at that point everyone feels better.
Right, yeah, I mean, Chuck was great for print interviews, and you know, his articles were fantastic. You know, but I think with radio, it's a little more difficult because when they come in, they know immediately that thousands of people will hear what they're saying.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. So you can't just bombard them at the front,
right?
Because if they don't want to answer it, they're not going to answer it, and then the rest of the interview is shit after that.
No, and you're right. And a contentious radio interview is like death to listen to.
Yeah,
because it's just audio, and you're going, what is happening?
Exactly. Oh, this is awful. You know, at least when you're reading an article, you can kind of like read the article, look at the picture, read it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think the hardest thing for an artist to get past is the microphone, and it's not because it's some scary thing, but it's just in front of their face. So you have something in front of you. So, you know, if we were like this, you know, that's just a weird thing to look at, you know? So it's kind of strange. But what I used to do, and I got this from Sam Hill, who works at Alice here in Denver. You know, you're going to go through your standard questions. How's the tour going? You know, tell me about the single, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, what's the writing process?
Exactly. Like, you know, because that's just what they expect, you know. But then you'll also... But then you do something like, so what's your most favorite town you've been in? And if they say Denver, then it turns into like, well, have you been to Illegal Pete's?
Yeah, right.
You know, and then you can just get onto this conversation about burritos for 10 minutes, which you may or may not use in an interview.
Yeah.
But then it gets you and them into a comfortable enough position where it turns into a conversation between two people as opposed to an interview. You know, my favorite example was, I think last year or the year before, I interviewed Hayley Williams from Paramore for Countdown.
She seems cool.
Oh, she's great. She's lovely. And we were talking about Paramore and how this was the first album that they've released, blah, blah, blah. All the standard questions that every radio DJ around the country was going to ask.
Right.
Got to the, where's the best place that you ever played? And she was like, Japan and Australia. And me, loving Australia, and I was, you know, super keen to get out there. I was like, oh, have you ever had a Tim Tam Slam? And she's like, what's a Tim Tam Slam? You know, and I told her what it was, but then this conversation started to happen where it evolved into more than just a radio interview. Right. It's kind of where you get that compelling content of stuff that you wouldn't normally hear in a radio interview. Like, we talked about Tim Tams, green tea Kit Kats, where you can get those in LA. Her grandma was there, so we talked to her grandma for a little bit. Like, you know, those are the interviews that are interesting because it's not, tell me about the album.
You know, it's not the questions that could be answered by their you know, by their publicist.
Yeah,
I mean, because you know, someone like me who does PR for a living will script as many answers or will script answers to as many questions as you possibly can.
Yeah,
same deal on this show. And when I used to interview, like if I ever had to do job interviews for people. I have your resume. Like, I'm going to ask you
some. I know your qualifications. Yeah, like, I brought you in here because I saw your qualifications.
The people I'm interviewing all are capable of doing this job.
Yeah.
I want to check for fit. Mm-hmm. So I would always ask them something that they could not have prepared for. Just, and it, you know, nothing weird, but like, you know, what's the last book you read? Mm-hmm. And how was it?
Yeah.
And I just try and get them talking about something else because... To me, their answers didn't matter, but how they thought about things and how they answered questions was what really mattered.
Yep.
And so, I mean, it's skills that are applicable in a number of ways that you wouldn't necessarily think about it when you're sort of focused on doing your job.
Yeah, it's a little too mechanical.
Right.
You know, because when eventually if you do hire that person, you're not going to be working with them on a very mechanical basis.
No.
You know, you have to actually interact with them and... You know, if they don't fit the team, then you're just like, yeah, I hired a very capable person that just sucks working with the rest of us.
Yeah, right.
You know, and you get that in radio too sometimes. As social as we all are, sometimes you just hire someone based on their whether they interview well or their qualifications, but then they come in and they just can't work with us.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
And it's as they could be the best person in the world, but, you know, you still have to work with the team and, you know, it could be almost detrimental to the team.
Right.
Yeah.
So one thing I'm curious about is, did you know, like, before college that you wanted to do radio? Like, were you into stuff like that?
No.
Okay. So where, and you grew up kind of all over, right?
Yeah. Yeah. We moved around a lot when I was a kid. My dad works for a hotel business, so he kind of wanted to check out different resorts and things like that. And it was very cool. And I was very fortunate to do it.
So, like, what kind of places? Like, where'd you move around?
So, let's see. I grew up in San Francisco. My dad was working for hotels there. Then we moved to Hawaii for a couple years, the Big Island. After that, we moved to Palm Springs for a couple years. And then moved to Indonesia for 5 years. That's where I went to high school before coming to Fort Collins for university. And after that, they've moved to Shanghai and Kuala Lumpur and Macau. So they're still in the region.
So if you're going to high school in Indonesia, what compels you to come to, you know, Fort Collins, Colorado?
Well, we'll say Colorado State was my fourth choice.
Perfect.
I think.
So what is that, like your copper medal?
Do they even give out medals for fourth place? They probably do these days. I think everybody wins, right? So
yeah, I think it's a ribbon.
No, I wanted to go to University of Washington. I loved Seattle when I was a kid, and I wanted to go to that school. Didn't get in there, didn't get into Oregon. Got into CSU, and it just so happened that three of my other friends from high school were going to CSU.
Oh, weird.
So it seemed like a natural, like a more... an easier transition for me.
How did CSU get on your radar, though?
One of my friends applied, and she was like, you should apply. I was like,
all
right.
Did you look at it and go?
I looked at it, I'm like, yeah, it's all right.
Not bad.
So I actually went to Fort Collins, never...
having been there?
Been to Colorado.
Wow.
The first day that I was in Colorado was my first day ever in Colorado.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm pretty good anywhere. I like to think that, you know, just when you move around so much, you kind of get comfortable anywhere in new situations and stuff like that. So, you know, I got to Fort Collins. I'm like, all right, I can handle this.
Yeah.
You know, it's a nice, Fort Collins is a great town when you're a college student. You know, the campus is nice. You know, the people seem friendly.
Climate's, it's hard to beat the climate.
Oh, yeah. You know, worst winter we had in 13 years or something like that, the first winter I was there. And I was like, well, this is interesting.
What year was that?
2000. Fall 2000, something like
that. That's when I started, too.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, I remember in the towers where I lived freshman year, there was a, you know, the laundry vent was outside one of the exit doors.
Yeah.
So when all my friends would go down to smoke, I'd go down with them, and it'd be ass cold. You know, I'm not from here. I'm a tropical kid. I'm warm climate all the time.
Fucking Hawaii, and I'm Indonesia,
like,
yeah.
Like, Jesus, it's cold. And I'm just standing on top of this laundry vent because all the dryer heat was coming up. Like, this is the greatest place in the history of the world.
That's where all the smokers hung out, though.
Yeah, no. And we all did.
I mean, it was pretty great to go stand on it.
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. But, you know, going back to your question, no, I didn't want to do radio. Radio wasn't even a thought in my head until probably about 2002.
What were you into? Like,
I wanted to write.
Yeah,
I wanted to write for Rolling Stone, Spin magazine. You know, I wanted to stay involved with music that way.
So always into music.
Always into music. You know, I was in concert bands and marching bands, jazz bands. You know, whatever. I played trombone for 10 years, something like that.
Did you have a ska band?
Yeah, I was in a ska band in high school. Yeah.
What were you guys called?
We were called Four Flush.
Four. Good ska name.
My buddy, one of my good buddies, Kemba Walters. It was his band, but he's played in Juliet and the Licks.
Okay.
You know Juliet Lewis's band. He was with them. He just opened for Thrice with his band a couple weeks ago. He's played with Coheed. You know, he's doing fantastic things in LA. He was in a Jessica Simpson video too. It's really hilarious.
Who did you guys sound like? Because the ska band at that I saw a lot in high school sounded just like the Aquabats.
We weren't like full on ska. It was more punk ska type stuff.
So like ska core type.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah. Essentially, that's what it was. I was a band in high school, so I wanted to stay involved with music that way. And this is nothing against them, but when I got to CSU, and they're like, you know, if you want to do news, you should work for the Collegian, our school paper. And I got there, I was like, this is not where I want to be.
This is not for me.
They're lovely people, but that's just not the environment I want to be at. So
wasn't your, well, why?
It was not my scene. It, you know, like, I didn't fully get it at the time because, fuck, I was 18 and I was just having fun in college, but they took it very seriously.
Oh, the newspaper kids.
They took their jobs very seriously. And I, you know, with good reason, you know, it's a very, you know, it's a daily, so, you know, it has to come out, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, there's merit to that. But, you know, like, being in that environment when, like, because I looked at that too, and I walked in, I go, no, this is not going to happen for me. I don't have the right sensibility for this.
Yeah, no, I was like, no, this is, you know, this is not how I want to learn how to write. And like, I'd sit and learn about AP style and all that stuff. I'm like, nah, this isn't really for me.
Yeah.
So luckily I found that out first year of college and quickly got out of it as opposed to like third year of college and had to start all over. But I think it was fall semester of sophomore year. My roommate at the time, Dave Curtis, and my other roommate signed up for KCSU 101. They went to the whole boot camp thing at the beginning of the year. And
was that, did you go in like fall of 2001? Or like winter of 2000?
Fall. Because it's a funny story how this happened. I was walking out of the quad one day and I saw Dave and he was like, I'm going down to the radio station just to go meet some people. I was like, okay, whatever. He's like, do you want to come? I didn't have anything on, so I was like, sure, I'll come down.
What the hell?
And at the time, you know, I was handling my acapella group. I was, I had a lot, I had stuff going on, you know, but at the same time, I was just bored. So I was like, yeah, I'll hang out with you. Let's go down to the radio station. And went down there, and that was the first time I'd been at KCSU. And, you know, I met Jen Roeder, Amber Villani, Ryan Lewis, you know, Jared. I met all those guys.
And
Dewey, Daniel, you know. And it just kind of turned out that they were doing a training session that afternoon.
Oh, cool. All right.
And Jen was like, hey, you know, we got a couple spots open. You want to come? So, yeah, okay, whatever. And so Dave and I, like Dave, you know, KCSU, when you sign up to train, it's a list. You know, it's a waiting list to get trained. Some people don't get trained for months after they sign up.
Dude, I went to KCSU 101 in like September, whenever they had it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get trained until late November.
Yeah.
And so I got trained and then fucking tryouts were like
3 weeks after or something like that. Yeah.
And so I'm like, oh, crap. And so they ended up giving me a show, though, like Wednesday morning, midnight to 2.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was kind of things that we just accidentally got trained that day.
Sweet.
And then the next week we were doing our 12 hours of shadowing or whatever it was. Right. And then we were Thursday morning, 2 to 4.
Right.
You know, me, Dave, and our other roommate, Brad. And then, you know, as the year went on, like Dave and Brad started to kind of get involved less and less, but I started to get involved more and more.
Right, yeah.
Less on the show side, but more on the production side.
Yeah, you were like working under Beano, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Beano had a long radio career, too.
The summer of 2002, so just going into our junior year, KCSU rebranded from student-run radio 90.5 KCSU to 90.5 KCSU Your Radio.
That's right.
That was the summer of Your Radio. So he and I flipped all the imaging that summer.
Holy shit.
And that was great. That was a lot of fun. That was when we created the assistant production director job because I was attached to Beano's hip that summer. We hung out all summer. We were in the studio all summer. Going into that year, that was also the year that we did the whole BEA Best in Festival.
That's right.
Gabe won all that stuff. And that's when it was like, okay, I could probably do, this is fun.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, radio's fun. I could probably do this. This is good. You know, I'm pretty good at this. It's all right. And you know, that's kind of when the whole radio thing started for me. So I was late. I was late into it. I wasn't like the kid who stayed up, you know, taping Rick D's or making their own radio shows in their bedroom to their stuffed animals. You know, those stories all exist. I wasn't that kid at all. It was just something that I thought was a lot of fun and happened to get lucky and turn it into a career for the last 10 years, I guess.
Yeah, dude. I mean, it's funny. I remember one night I was doing my show. It was the midnight show. And you and Thea and Beano all walked in. And just, like, sort of walked onto my show.
Yeah.
And we just sort of talked. And I go, oh, these kids are cool. Like, like these kids, like, they love radio. And I was, like, I don't know. I think I was, like, much more snarky and smarmier back then.
You're a punk rock kid now. What do you expect?
Yeah, I was so snotty. But,
Oh, shit.
Do you remember that one Halloween where I dressed up as Benji from Good Charlotte?
Yeah.
And I was coming down the stairs of the student center, and you were coming out of the radio, and you're like, who is this dude? Oh, fuck, it's Johnny X. And, yeah, so, I mean, that was, like, that was me sort of poking fun at myself.
Yeah.
Like, being all, like, anti-Good Charlotte.
Yeah, and, you know, it was a good crew, and those years, for me, I feel like those years were just magical.
Yeah,
you know, too. The way everybody came together from air staff to volunteers to, you know, the programming staff.
To the underwriting kids, like,
yeah,
the kids who would go there and try and sell shit?
Sell the radio station.
That's amazing.
Like, imagine having to sell a station that's run by zero adults.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the inmates running the jailhouse.
Yeah. And it was successful,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, and like, it was a successful radio station. You know, it was, like you said, one of the most prominent ones in the country.
Yeah.
You know, there weren't a lot of student stations at the time that were teaching kids hands-on, how to do things hands-on, how to do production.
Like commercial quality, yeah, type stuff.
You know, how to voice and how to produce and, you know, actual skills. And the funny thing is that out of the three media outlets at CSU, you know, CTV, Collegian, and us, you know, we were probably the most obnoxious. And not like out of work, but at work. Easily the loudest,
oh, yeah,
most obnoxious. And, you know, the CTV kids would be, like, ready for a newscast. And the Collegian were ready for their deadline.
And like, yelling at each other.
Yeah,
like,
and we're like, la, la, fuck you. You know, that kind of stuff. But
yeah, like blasting punk rock. Like,
yeah.
And watching fucking Bob Ross at 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah. Skipping class to watch Bob Ross for no apparent reason. But yeah, you know, I think it's because you got that interesting mix of kids who wanted to do radio, maybe long-term, like Bino, Gabe, and I, and then people who just wanted to do it because it was fun. You know, at the Collegian, it seemed like everybody at the Collegian wanted to be a newspaper writer, so that's why they were all at the Collegian.
CTV, yeah, it was like law school. They were, like, climbing over each other.
Yeah, CTV, you know, it was very, you know, a lot of the news kids were a lot of the news kids. Yeah. And then, you know, everybody else, you know, had a very specific reason for being there. Like, KCSU was like, yeah, you like music? Cool. Here's our music director.
Come hang out.
Yeah, hang out. Listen to a couple CDs. Make sure they don't swear so we can play them on the radio. Great. Here's a show. We'll train you. Blah, blah, blah. If you want to do this, great. You know, and then there's a couple of us who wanted to do it long term who were just like, all right,
yeah,
cool. But we're still going to have fun. You know, we're still going to hang out with you. And we're not going to think you're lesser of a person because you don't want to do this all the time like we do.
Well, like me and Casey's show.
Yeah.
Like we clearly had no higher aspirations. I could have been a better DJ if I, like, worked at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't care. I wanted to do my show. Like, we would turn the monitor way up. You know, we'd be in there. Sometimes we'd be drinking, which I know.
You can say that now.
Yeah, I know. But I don't want to poison the well for everyone else.
Let's not set that example for everyone.
No. But, you know, we're fucking punk rock kids. Yeah. Like, we're dicks.
Damn the man.
Casey used to show up with this big, like, green suitcase full of CDs.
Yeah.
And, but I remember one time, like, Patrick and Zach and everyone, they were all having a meeting in the station director's office, and I was taking psychology of human sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
So I just took this diagram of, like, genitalia and put it up in the window. And
that's kind of stuff we do.
But yeah, I mean, that was, and yeah, they were having, like, some money related meeting, but they all laughed, which was good.
Yeah, it's, you know,
it was fucking, like, the greatest thing, and it sort of informed my worldview.
Oh yeah, I mean, it was good fun down there. And, like, you know, I don't know about the years afterwards. I mean, I think I popped in every once in a while, but it just seemed like those 5 years. That made college for me. I could have not gone to college and worked at KCSU and been fine.
Yeah, no, you know, I don't think it would work exactly the same for me. But no, you're right.
But I think I got more out of working at KCSU than I did in my 4 years of college. Aside from, you know, certain things here and there, but
sure. Did you go Greek at all?
I was a member of a music fraternity,
okay,
which wasn't officially Greek.
Okay,
so we didn't have a house.
Because some people, like, when they talk about frats and, you know, if, like, they went Greek or whatever, I'm always like, you know, I had the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, was, like, our little fraternity.
Yeah.
And people would come in and come out, and I can't really think of anyone who I actively disliked there.
Yeah.
You know, there are some people, you know, maybe a little
rub
bit oil
the wrong
water,
way,
but
yeah. But then, you know, you say hi in the hall, but you don't really.
But yeah, we were all still cool.
Yeah.
And, like, it was all just so fun. I remember when, like, you were leaving, Because you graduated what, like 05?
fall semester 04. So that was when I was program director and Chris Dittmer was station manager.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And like Braden was music director?
Yeah.
Okay, that's right. I remember when you left to move to San Francisco, I was so fucking bummed. But I remember thinking, I'm like, this dude is going to go and he's going to fucking, like, he's going to make it. Like, this dude, out of everyone here, is going to go and make something of himself in the big city.
I'm glad you thought so, because I wasn't sure. For a long time, I wasn't sure.
I remember you were slinging sweatshirts for a while.
I was, yeah.
Like, I remember thinking that. I'm like, no. Like, it may take a little time, but he's going to fucking make it. And the fact that you did it there, you came back to Denver for a little bit, mm-hmm. working Alice and all those.
Denver came to me very much right place, right time. Because when I was working in San Francisco, I only had the job for... I was production director at our country station over there. I only had that job for maybe 7 months before they restructured.
Wow.
And, you know, they didn't want to lose me, but at the same time, they knew they couldn't demote me.
Right.
Well, they could have, and I just would have said no.
Right.
Homie,
don't play that.
Yeah, so it just worked out that...
For a nice topical reference.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Fucking 80 some whatever, 90 something.
My bad.
Good living color reference. Jesus Christ. Bro. no, but it was very much right place, right time. You know, Alice had just gotten a new program director, Dylan Sprague, who is one of the most brilliant program directors I've ever met. And they were looking for a creative services director for Alice, who just happened to need to know how to do video, which I knew how to do from college. Thanks, CSU.
You also did CTV, right?
For a bit, yeah. But nothing really hands-on.
Yeah,
nice. But my PD, who was really bothered by the fact that they were restructuring to the point of demotions and stuff like that, he was like, what can we do? And I just happened to know that Denver was hiring. And he was like, okay, we'll make a call. Made a couple calls, talked to Dylan. 2 weeks later, I was back in Denver.
Wow.
And, you know, I was... very much not ready for this job.
Really?
Looking back, I was very green, and I had to learn a lot of things on the fly. I had to learn how to do a lot of things that generally you would take a little time to learn these things.
Yeah, sure. With maybe like, almost be like an apprentice, right?
Yeah. You know, and I had started that process in San Francisco, but at the same time, I was doing a big job. But as an imaging director, I knew about maybe 60% of what I should know. And so I was very lucky and I was very fortunate to get the job in Denver and be able to man such a giant station, you know, that Alice is and be at the helm of that. Like my first couple of weeks, the first promos they were fine. They weren't great.
Right.
But you know, they also gave me a lot of room to grow. And, you know, Dylan was very, very patient with me in that regard. Like he was one of those guys that saw the potential too. And I'm hoping it's because, you know, like Scott and Dwight, my PD and GM in San Francisco really sold that to him. So he was very patient with me. So I got to try a lot of different things. I got to play around with stuff. And, you know, by the time I left Denver after almost 4 years, I was imaging director for Alice, 99.5 The Mountain and Cozy 101.1.
Wow.
And that was at, you know, 29 years old, I think. So I was very fortunate to be in that position. And I'm very grateful for the time I had in Denver. And the fact that I had spent, you know, 4.5 years in Fort Collins and then another 4 years here, Denver is as much home to me as anywhere else. People still, you know, like I'll still meet with friends and they're like, when are you coming home? And I'll say, you know, I don't know, but it'll be very natural to just kind of relate to Denver as home a little bit because I did live here for so long.
Do you worry about, I mean, every year you'll read some long think piece in some, you know, in some like highfalutin magazine mm-hmm. about the death of radio.
Yeah.
Is that something that concerns you or I asked Fizz this because Fizz was on the show like over a fucking year ago. And he worries about it to an extent, but radio has, like, an immediacy and a locality
mm-hmm.
that is hard to replicate.
Yeah.
Is this something you worry about?
Not really. No, not really. For that reason, that's a very big reason. But I'm also under the huge belief that people will not pay for what they already get for free. So things like satellite radio, they're like satellite radio is going to be the death of radio. It's not, because a very small portion of people will actually be willing to pay for that. When they say iPods are going to be the death of radio, you know, we all hang out with a fairly technologically current group of friends, so we all have iPhones or iPods, iPads, whatever. But, you know, we're also not the majority. It may seem like everybody and their mom has a you know, smartphone or whatever, but, you know, they don't really use it in the car.
Right.
You know.
Well, and something like 30% of people regularly listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
Like, that's it.
Yeah.
Which is nothing.
You know, and globally, it's even less. Yeah. You know, in Australia, radio is a very big deal. Who was I telling the other day? I was having lunch with someone, and I was telling them that when our survey books come out, the evening news does a story on the survey books.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, they'll be like, Kyle and Jackie O, number one in Sydney again. You know, number two is this station, blah, 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 whatever. You know, because radio, they treat radio as a very glamorous occupation. You know, it's very star-studded. It's still a massive industry.
Wow.
Over there. Here, not so much. You know, but people still do listen to the radio. And so, I mean, in the respect of, do I think the death of radio is imminent? No.
Right.
But I also think right now radio is struggling to stay relevant because it's a little behind the curve when it comes to new tech, because it's more of a, it always felt like it was more of a, let's see how it pans out first and let's jump on it.
Right, right.
You know, things like Instagram or, you know, Snapchat, Twitter, you know, these are all very prevalent now in radio. But, you know, if we were the people who were on the forefront, you know, 2 years ago, you know, it'd be a very different thing. But it's you know, radio's a business.
Sure.
You know, and you got to be able to test and research before you make a drastic decision like that. You know, going into digital, doing video, stuff like that in 2007 when I first started, that was very new. It was a new idea. Nobody was exactly sure how to do it. I didn't know how to really produce what we were trying to produce, you know.
Right.
But at Alice, when Gabe was doing our video and stuff like that, it was we did a lot of video.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of put us up front as far as that goes. But then when social media started to boom, you know, no one really knew how to apply social media to radio, because it was like, but we're auditory. This is whatever. It's like,
yeah, this is, know, like text and visual.
But then
based.
You go on Facebook and it's like, boom, radio station, this boom, promo that. You know what I mean? It's almost to the point where it's too much.
Yeah, it's so weird because, like, you've got radio stations focusing on creating all this viral content and, like, you know, these, like, funny pictures, like, funny caption pictures and memes and shit. And it's to the point where I'm like, when is Facebook going to create a button that blocks content from radio stations? Because you get people sharing shit from, like, stations from all across the country.
Yeah. It's funny when I see people share stuff from my radio station.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
in Australia?
Yeah, we've been fortunate where we've done some really big things this year. We did a surprise give back. We do these things called give backs on our show. And we did one where we GoPro'd the listener's car without her knowing.
Okay.
So her daughter was driving her around to what she thought was a spot date. And we had our air personalities talk to her through the radio. And she didn't know it.
Okay.
So she was just in the car. And then all of a sudden, Kyle and Jack were talking to her through the radio. And we did a whole video on it. You know. And that got shared around the world.
Yeah.
One of the most massive, like, biggest hits we've ever had.
Well,
on
that
video.
Thing is, that type of thing is cool.
Yeah.
Compared to, like, you know, the baby with, like, the surly look on its face. And, like, you know, when you take my milk away, I'd be all, like, shit like that.
Sharing for sharing's sake is definitely not a disease, but it's something that's, it's just grasping for content.
Yeah.
You know, it's just grasping for hits. And we used to talk about that at Alice, too, when we were going through, you know, social media research. It's like, when is too much too much?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, is what you're sharing really important to the listener? Is that content really necessary? Yeah, it's funny every now and then. But if you're just blasting memes out at people, if you're just blasting stupid cat videos out, it's like, is it really,
you know? Is this who our station is?
Yeah, you're just trying to get that hit, get that share, get that, you know, which is important. But I'm still very much behind the great content will get shared around the world. And
no,
we've been lucky enough to do great content.
I agree with you. I mean, it starts with good authorship and responsible curation of, like, who are we? And, is this indicative of who we want to be?
Right.
And you're right. I mean, that starts with thoughtful content, which is why I do what I do. I try and encourage people. Like, I have a client, I'm rewriting their website right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, redoing some of the bios of their people. And I go, okay, this is who you want to be. You need to write your content this way to convey that.
Mm-hmm.
And so, just basically being thoughtful is all you can say.
You know, just be aware of what you're sharing, you know, and how it's being looked at in a broad sense.
Yeah, no. Well, dude, I'll tell you what. I mean, we're over an hour at this point.
You're going to have some fun chopping this one up.
Oh, it'll be fine, man.
It'll be all right.
Watch, you're going to send it to me. Can you cut this interview real quick?
Yeah, right. Dude, no. I'd never do that to you. I know your workload in Australia.
We didn't even really talk about my job, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah, no. That's kind of the way this works sometimes. Yeah. I mean, spend a
my
lot
job's
of time
cool, on. By the way, just in case anybody wanted to know.
All right, where... Well, shit, where can people find you? What do you want to plug?
God, I don't even know what to plug. I don't even have a website. How lame is that?
Do you still have, like, your SoundCloud clips and stuff?
Yeah, I'll post stuff every now and then. It's soundcloud.com/Mike Santos. Stuff goes up there every now and then. Like,
you did that intro for Justin Timberlake.
Yes.
That he referred to as, like, the greatest intro.
The greatest thing he's ever heard on the history of radio ever. That's a direct quote from Justin Timberlake, by the way.
He said it was, like, the greatest intro he's ever had.
Those are fun. Those were fun for me. I loved making those when I was working with Carson, just to see the reaction of what the artist would get. You know, I'm going to do a very look at me moment here real quick, because these things are awesome. So
this is the plug section of the podcast.
Yeah, so we did the Justin Timberlake one, and he loved it. And so everyone after that had to be like, how can we impress people? Katy Perry was dumbfounded when I made her intro. Who else? Alicia Keys asked for hers to be played again before the interview started. And then God, who was the last person? I think it was Trey Songz. I did a little intro for him. He's like, man, I need to take that on tour and use it as my show intro. I was like, dude, what is happening? What is going on? I spent like 20 minutes on this. What is going on? It was so surreal. I don't know. Like, I had to actually go into our archiver and cut those moments out and just save them, just because I was like, yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, how do you beat that? You
know, is that stuff in your SoundCloud? I know the Justin Timberlake one is.
The Justin Timberlake one is.
I'll link to that one specifically.
I think the Katy Perry one might be. The Gwen Stefani one's not. I need to find that. That's on a CD somewhere. It's on a hard drive somewhere. But
yeah.
I mean, Johnny, if you want, I'll send you some just like random promos that I've made for Kyle and Jack. I'm not sure. It's. And you can post those anywhere.
Yeah, dude, let's do that. Because I think it would be cool for people to like. This is what you do, like,
yeah,
in a day,
you know,
for many, many hours a day.
It's, you know, radio in Australia is very different, you know, but in a lot of ways it's the same. And I'm very fortunate where I get to play with a lot of great content every single day. So making great daily promos that are hilarious, promoting the show, you know, I'm very lucky to be able to do that. And with your intro was a lot of fun because, you know, you sent me the song you wanted to use,
yeah,
and the clip you wanted to use. And you said, do something with it.
Yeah, well, I said, I want to hear this person saying, start the show. Or if you find something, you know, analogous to that.
Yeah.
I'm like, everything else. And then, you know, when this part of the song kicks in, then the intro comes.
Mm-hmm.
You did, like, when I got it back, I go, holy shit. Like, you did way more with this than I expected. And I'm like, I could never have made anything like this in my life.
Yeah, well, it was a lot of fun. A lot of the reason I do this is just because it's fun and just seeing what you can come up with. But that one in particular, you know, because there was very little like, this is what it needs to be. I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to roll with this until he says, I don't know what you did, but I don't like it. So I just cut a whole bunch of stuff up and see how well that panned out. And now, lo and behold, you have an intro that apparently everybody likes.
Dude, you crushed it. I mean, it's
fantastic.
Yeah, and every time, like, when I'm cutting the show together, I've listened to the intro, like, too many times.
I had to listen to it again because I forgot what it sounded like. I knew it was Paul Heyman. I just forgot what the whole thing sounded like.
Yeah, and I showed Kristen the clip where that came from. And she goes, oh, my God. Like, we were watching, like, Beyond the Mat.
Uh-huh.
And he says, you've all made it to the dance. She started doing the intro. Like,
with the dance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was so funny. She's like, oh, wow. So, yeah, that's... She's like, it's weird hearing that out of context.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that's, I love it when that kind of stuff resonates with people.
Yeah.
Because you can always be impressed by flashy lights and all that stuff. But if you can impress someone audio, like...
It's a very sort of like primal experience.
Yeah. So, you know, because it's just, you know, like I said before, way earlier to me, now it's just noise a lot of the time. Because I'm so drained in and out of it. But when you can just sit there and create something that you might feel like that draws some kind of emotion, that's me doing my job the right way. Yeah. And that's, I got that tip years ago from Dave Fox, who is the creative director at Z100 New York. It's like radio promo should invoke some kind of emotion, whether it's happy, sad, excitement, yeah, you know, that kind of stuff. If you're just putting a promo together for promo's sake, with you're kind of missing the point. You're not invoking any kind of reason to listen. So that's kind of, you know, if I can create something that builds to an excitement, or, you know, that's me doing my job every day.
Totally.
Which is good.
I think that's a good note to end on.
Yeah.
Thanks, Mikey.
No problem, dude.
I fucking miss you like crazy. So.
I miss, dude. It's so hard coming back here sometimes because I'm like, fuck, I never want to leave.
Right.
You know, but then at the same
there's
time,
like all these cool people. Like, you're doing a fucking tour.
Yeah, you know, it's every single day. You know, and it's, I feel bad when I can't see certain people because schedules just don't meet up or whatever. But you know, I love coming back.
Yeah,
I think if I ever did move back to the States, maybe I wouldn't move back to Denver, but right. I would always find a way to be here a couple times a year.
Yeah, of course.
You know?
Well, shit, man. I know you'll continue to crush it. I always knew you would, and you're doing it. You're fucking you're destroying it, so safe travels to you, man.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks for being.
And that wraps up episode 64 of the John of All Trades podcast with Mike Santos, a radio production ninja. Man, I miss this dude. I love hanging out with this dude, and I could talk to him for a month of Sundays. It would just be us bullshitting about UFC, about punk music, about his work in Australia, which we didn't even get to in this episode, which I'm kind of embarrassed about, but I don't really care because we got to talk shop, and if you're at all interested in sort of the ins and outs of how radio gets made, this was a great episode. So I say that with no shame or reservation. This was a great episode. And this episode was sponsored by 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES. They will help you get your message out to the people that need to hear it most, and they will do it in the most cost-effective way possible. They will find the people on the networks they are on and get your message in front of them. It's fabulous work. I love working with them. The number 4, DEGRE.ES. The John of All Trades podcast is a production of Deft Communications. Find us on the web. DEFTCOM.US. New episodes are teased on Monday. They go up live every Wednesday. So check us out on social media, JOATpod, Facebook, and Twitter. And until that time comes when we post next week's episode, say goodnight, Gracie.